starts Kiseitse la melchoma aloivecha. You go out to battle against your enemy. And the Arizal says that in this parsha is a hint to the war and the battle that we do with our greatest enemy, which is the Yetzer Hara. There's only one problem, and that if it's referring euphemistically to the battle that we do with our evil inclination, then this battle, Rashi says, has to be talking about a voluntary war, not one that there's a mitzvah to do. Because in a war that's a mitzvah, you have to kill men, women, and children. You can't take captives. So this has to be talking about a war that you volunteer outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael, where you can take captives. It's talking about taking a captive woman. So the problem is, if it's referring euphemistically to the battle with the Yetzer Hara, how can it be talking about a battle that is not mandatory but voluntary? The war with the Yetzer Hara is not voluntary, it's mandatory. So the two things don't seem to go together. The idea, the Tiferes Shlomo says, that the main war that a person has with his Yetzer Hara, a believing Shomer Torah mitzvahs, is in those things that are voluntary, that are permissible, that are not necessarily a mitzvah or an aveira, but the middle area of things that are permissible. And in fact, the Rabbeinu Bachya says that Lo Dibra Torah Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara, this whole parsha of Eishes Yifas Torah, of taking this captive woman, which we will discuss in a few minutes, the Torah only spoke concerning the Yetzer Hara. The simple meaning is that in this situation of war, a man is not going to be able to control his evil impulse, and the Torah therefore said if we prohibit it, he's not going to be able to hold himself back. But if we permit it in a way that he has to go through a whole process, then knowing that it's permitted in the end, he'll be able to hold himself back. When a person has bread in the basket, he's able to hold himself back and not eat than when he's famished and knows he has nothing to eat. Then the fasting is much worse. So here the Torah gave the person a way of doing this in a permissible way, so he'll wait, and hopefully by the end of the process he won't wander anymore. So that's the real reading of the Chazal. Lo Dibra Torah, the Torah only was concerned in how to deal in this situation with a person's Yetzer Hara, and therefore gave him this process in order to be able to face his Yetzer Hara. But the Rabbeinu Bachya says that it also has another hint that this whole parsha tells us how to deal with our Yetzer Hara. And dealing with the Yetzer Hara, I think, for believing people, for people who are basically religious, Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, observant people, their main Yetzer Hara is not in prohibited things, and not in yes to do mitzvahs, not to do mitzvahs. The main thing is how to deal with those areas that are not a mitzvah and not an aveira, but have to be done in a proper way, and if done improperly, then they're the Yetzer Hara, and if done properly, they could be even a mitzvah. So, and even though normally we say that it's better to avoid permissible things, if you don't need it, and it's not a mitzvah, then don't be too much involved. Kedoshim tiyu, prushim. Separate yourself and desist from from permissible things. Don't get involved in things that you don't have to have and don't need excessively. Right? However, there are situations and times dependent on each and every person what he needs to be involved with in this world and that he can't separate himself from and that he can't desist from. He needs it for his service of the Rabban Shah. He needs it because of his character, because of his circumstances, and he can't just separate himself from it and be able to function properly. I give you an absurd example, but somebody needs an ice cream cone, right? Could be better. You shouldn't become dependent on having to have an ice cream cone, right? Who needs it? Right? I'm sure that the great Rav Liashiv, you know, doesn't have his daily ice cream cone, right? Not in his world. But somebody who needs that, and if they don't have it, they're going to feel oppressed, right? They're going to feel that they're missing something in their life that makes them an unhappy person, not a happy camper. And if they just had it, they would feel better about themselves, and they'd be able to function a lot better, right? Just that little treat that perks them up. So for that person, that ice cream cone may be important. And just the opposite, separating yourself and abstaining from it, that's the word I was looking for, abstaining from it, right, is in this situation not good, because the abstinence is going to bring you to be miserable. So maybe you should be on a level where you can outgrow it and not need that ice cream cone. But as long as you need it, don't abstain from it, because that's not the positive way of functioning. And that I heard from my Rosh Yeshiva, who was Nifter recently, Reb Chaim Stein Zatzal, said the Nazir, on the one hand, is holy because he abstains from wine, right? But on the other hand, he's called a sinner, because after 30 days, or the amount of time that he designated to abstain from the wine is over, he goes back to drinking wine. That means that he still needs the wine. So when he didn't drink the wine, he was hurting himself and paining himself not to drink wine. That's not good. You should outgrow it. You don't need it. But if you need it, then don't abstain from it. Then use it in a proper way. And therefore, the Torah says, now we're talking now symbolically, okay, the symbolic meaning of what's going on here. When you go out to fight your Yetzer Hara, and specifically in areas that are not mitzvahs or averes, but the divrei rishus, the things that are permissible, that ideally you shouldn't be involved too much in permissible things, abstain from them. Better. Kedoshim to you. But as an individual, and that's why the parsha is said in the singular, kiseitze l'melchama, not kiseitze, when you go out, plural, when you privately, because since we're talking about this area of how to deal with permissible things, it changes for every person. What I need to be able to function properly is not what you need. You may need less than I do. I may need that ice cream cone. You don't need it. You've outgrown it. Right? If you've outgrown it, then you don't need it. If I have a daughter who's 4 and a daughter who is 14, right, and my little 4-year-old needs to go to bed with her little doll every night, right, and if I take away her doll, I destroy her world, right, that's fine. Then I shouldn't take away her little doll, because for her, that 4-year-old, that doll is what she needs to be able to function. But if my 14-year-old needs that little doll to go to sleep with every night, something is wrong, right? She should have outgrown that. If I take the doll away from the 14-year-old, I'm not oppressing her and hurting her and paining her. So she doesn't have the doll. She likes to keep her dresser as a remembrance of her childhood, but she's not going to go crazy as the 4-year-old would. So if you're holding by the level of the 4-year-old and you need that doll, then don't abstain. If you're holding by the level of the 14-year-old, you don't need it that much, and better to get rid of the doll. What do you need the doll for? So therefore, the parsha was said in the singular. These kinds of battles are very, very personal, and you can't learn from one person to another. And therefore, the halacha is that a person can take this captive woman, who we're going to see symbolically represents the permissible things in the world, right? That you're going to try to turn into something positive, but it could be used as something negative, right? You can only take it for yourself. You can't take it for somebody else. You can only capture this woman, not because you say, hey, I think my father would like this lady, or whatever, or my brother, or the guy next door. No, it's a personal thing. It's only you. Every person's situation when it comes to these things, what they should abstain from and what they should indulge in is very, very personal. And therefore, the Ramban says, it's only the chashaktaba. If you want her, you desire her, then you're allowed to do this whole process. But if you have no desire to force yourself to want to do this, if you don't need it, don't get involved in it. But if you have this desire, the chashakta ba, then you can go through this whole process. So again, symbolically, if you have a need for that permissible thing and you really want it, then there's an idea of a process of how to make it positive. If you don't really want it, don't go out of your way to want things that you don't need. Then it's better to abstain. And that's why I think the word cheshek. Cheshek means to desire, to really want something. The word cheshek, there is another place in the Torah, it's called v'chashukehem. It's talking about the Mishkan, and basically what it's talking about is the following. In the Mishkan, let me give you an example of something not in the Mishkan, but where we have this idea of chashukim. You have a barrel, a wooden barrel. It's made of what's called pieces of wood that are put together in a circle to make up the barrel. But in order to hold the barrel together, you need a band of metal that goes around the outside of these pieces of wood to hold them together. That's called chashukim. Chashukim is something from the outside that holds everything together. It's not the ikar thing. It's not the barrel. That's the main thing. But it's what will hold the barrel together outside, externally. So these kinds of permissible things are not the main thing in a person's Torah life. They're external things. But if you don't have them, everything else could fall apart. So you need them to hold everything together. That's called chashukim. That's the chashakta. I have this desire. And if I use it properly, it could just put everything together and hold everything together. If I use it wrongly, right, I make that the main thing, it could destroy the whole barrel. So it has to have its place as an external to hold everything together, not to become the main thing. Okay. So what is this process? Right? How do you take things that, if you indulge in them, they can be very, very negative and destroy your life as a Jew? Or if you indulge in them, they can be very positive and enhance and help your life as a Jew. What's the process to deal with these kind of things to make them positive? So this woman that you captured, this captured Goyisha woman in this battle, right, symbolically now of the things that are permissible, not a mitzvah, not an aveira, you bring her home, and she basically goes through a period of mourning for 30 days. What's mourning? Mourning is recognizing a less than ideal situation that was thrust upon you, which you may not have chosen. Somebody died, a relative died, somebody close to you. It's not ideal, right? You would have rather not to go there. But now you have to take in consideration the circumstance as it is and adapt to it and be able to cope with it, right, and get on with your life and use the new circumstance in a positive way. That's what mourning is, to be able to adapt to a less than ideal situation. So same thing over here. You want to be able to take something permissible that maybe the ideal would be to abstain from it, but you're not on that level. You're still the four-year-old who needs your doll. You need that ice cream cone. So it's not ideal. Ideally, you shouldn't need that, right? Again, Rabbi Yosef doesn't go to bed with a little doll every night, and he doesn't need ice cream cones, okay? I'm not implying that I do, but I'm just saying that let's speak about something that's obviously, okay, very obvious. So if that's the case, right, that's maybe the ideal. But you're not Rabbi Yosef. And you do need that ice cream cone. And you're still holding where you need that little doll to go to sleep with. So it's not an ideal situation, but how do you adapt to that less than ideal situation and make the best of it and make it something positive? That is what the parasha teaches us. And that's why this 30-day period of crying for her mother and father, which we'll see is part of all this process, as the Zohar Chodesh says, is a hint to the month of Elul. Because that's what the month of Elul is about. To investigate, right, all of the things, not just the mitzvahs and aveiras you did. Those are pretty obvious. But even the permissible things that you're involved, are you involved in them in a way that is positive or in a way that's negative? What of those things should you divest yourself of before the coming year comes? What are those things should you hold on to and enhance in a positive way? What of those things that you are fighting your Yetzirah on, permissible things, should you take as a captive, and what things should you let go? That's part of what the Avodah of Elul is. So now let's go through the process and see how symbolically it applies to how to deal with permissible things. Hold the questions till the end. First thing, Vehevesa Toch Beisecha, bring her into your house. And I think that implies a few different things. First of all, take a look at this permissible thing that you want to be involved in and see if it befits a Jewish home. Could you bring it in your house? Okay? Example, you need the internet, right? You need your email and you need what's it called to buy things, whatever, right? Is there something you should bring into your home or not? Right? And maybe there's a way to do it, a way not to do it. But what's it called? First consider, would you want this in your house? Right? Yeah, I want to, what's it called? Would you want this kind of thing? Is this the kind of thing that you would be ashamed to have in a Jewish house or not? That's the first consideration. Bring it into your house. Does it fit your house? Secondly, the Nitziv says you bring her into the house to teach her what it means to be a Jew. She should see what it means to get up in the morning and wash Negel Vasser, what a Yom Tov is like. Somebody want her to convert, right? Converts, we usually, before they convert, give them a family that they can spend a Yom Tov with. They can see it, you know, not just read about it in books, but see how it's actually done. So the Nitziv says we bring her into the house, let her see what it means to live Jewish, meaning take those permissible things and give them a Jewish touch to them, a Jewish flavor, right? A Torah flavor, right? First see in the way that they are, do they fit your house? And if they don't, then perhaps you have to adjust them, right, and shape them in a way that they become more Jewish. Okay. What's it called? Thirdly, right, for instance, maybe let's say you really like sushi, right, which is something for sure that I have no shaykhus to. I can't imagine eating raw fish. In any case, wrapped in seaweed, it just does not sound like something I would want to spend money on. In any case, that there are people who go crazy on. So maybe in the way that it is secularly looked at is not something that, you know, befits a Jewish home, but you can bring it into your home and make it something that you can use for a Shabbos or a Yom Tov and use it in a positive way and Jewishize it, Torahize it. Maybe that's also possible. Next thing is, get a good close look at this permissible thing and be able to see all of its detail. Bring it into your house and get a close look at it. Don't only look at it from afar and imagine what's it called, that it's probably okay or whatever. Get a good look. Using the internet as a responsibility, if you can change the tempo, I may be able to keep up with it, but... you want to get a new phone, right? One of these iPhones or whatever, right? Find out, you know, if it's going to go off in the middle of a shiur or whatever. Find out all the details of how to work it so you know how to turn it off or where to keep it on or whatever. So get a good idea of what it is that you're dealing with and those kinds of things that are permissible. And another hint, I think, over here symbolically is you bring it into your domain. You don't go out into its domain, right? You love sushi? Fine. Bring it home. Don't go to the Chinese restaurant and eat it there. Is it Chinese? In any case, so do it in your environment. Don't go out into its environment. Okay. So those are all hints, symbolically, to the first idea of this process. You're going to deal with things that are permissible, that you can't abstain from, that you need to indulge in. Okay? Bring it into your home and see if it fits a Jewish home. Secondly, if it doesn't, try to shape it so it can, that's possible. If it's impossible, then maybe it's not for you. Try to see it up close and see all of its details. get a good look at every part of it. And also, what's it called, you bring it into your environment, don't go after it into its environment. Because going into that environment may be a negative thing, even though the thing itself is not necessarily negative. Okay, next thing. Shave this woman's head. Take off her hair. Gilches Rosha, shave her head. The hair represents what extends from the mind, from the head. Okay. It also has to do with sight. There's a Gemara that says that hairs come, each one from a different follicle. If they would grow from the same follicle, the person would go blind. So hair and sight go together. So, it was interesting. I'm wondering now, like, what's the quote? What? Mara says if two hairs would come from the same follicle, a person would go blind. The Rav Moshe made it that each hair has its own root, its own follicle. What that means, I don't know. I'm just thinking now, I'm having a cataract operation on Sunday. And I just realized that my hair is also thinning. There may be some connection between that. The weakened eyesight and thinning hair, there may be some connection to that. In any case, let's just leave that for now. So what does it mean to shave her head? I think what it means is the following. You take something and you really desire it, you want it, right? It's something you feel you need for your service, Hashem, and you build on it excuses, grandiose ideas why this thing could be tremendously important and good for you or whatever. Shave its head. Look at it as it really is. Don't have all these extra, things, all these extra ideas that spin webs around it and make it seem more desirable than it really is. Shave the head and see it, what its essence is, not what the things that the ideas that you think, will make this very attractive and positive or whatever. Okay. See it as it really is, not as you'd like it to be. A woman's hair, right, enhances her beauty. When you shave her head, you see her as she is under all of that. Okay. And sometimes, therefore, you can't do it yourself. You need to get a barber to shave her head. You don't know how to do it. Okay? You don't have the equipment. So go to somebody who can shave away all these things and let you know how it really is. Go ask Das Torah, whatever. Another idea of the hair represents extras, things that aren't really necessary. They're the extras to the body. They're not the essence of the body. Take away, and they represent also, the hair represents to a certain degree kochos hatuma. They're the connections to negative things, spiritually negative. Take away all its connections to the negative and take away the things that aren't necessary, right? You want to bring media into your home, right? A computer. But there are things that are necessary. If you have a computer, things that aren't necessary. Take away the unnecessary things first, things that aren't necessary that you're bringing in when you don't even need them. So cut off the hair, shave the head. That all is right. And that, if you do that, sometimes you can change something from tame to tahar by shaving a metzora. When he goes from being tame to turning into a tahar person, he shaves all the hair in his body. It's like a new start. So take away all the extras, take away all the imagined benefits that you see in this thing, shave it down to its essence and get a look at what it really is. That's the first. That's the next part of the process. Next thing. It's two opinions. Let her grow her nails long or cut them off. Cut her nails short. And some say there's a sifri that says both are true. You let her nails grow for 30 days, then you cut them off. The nails, just like the hair represents what extends from the mind, the ideas that you've built on these things that may really not be true, just imagined. The what extends from the hands is what comes lemaisa practically from this thing. Meaning the following, there are two possibilities. You can have something that essentially is no good, but there's benefits that come from it. I have tremendous benefits, right? Let's use the internet perhaps as an example, okay? Even I don't hold that the internet is always awesome, okay? Nothing is always awesome. And if everything is something is always awesome, then people can't deal with it, and then everything becomes mutter. It's better to deal with it, right, in a way that's controlled than to abstain from it, which if it's impossible in society today, especially if you're in business or whatever, then you're not going to be able to keep to it. So in any case, so let's take the internet. The internet may be something very, very dangerous, harmful, okay? But there's so many good things that you could do with it. So cut off the fingernails. Cut off what emanates from it and take a look at the hand. Is it a good hand or a bad hand? Don't look at it. Sometimes the opposite is true. The thing is very good, but there are implications and things that it can cause that are very negative. Okay? You could use it. It could have bad implications. But the thing is good. So cut off the fingernails. Right? Take away the things that it could generate negative, take those away and leave it without those things. Or don't be misled by the things that look like it could really be good if the thing itself is rotten. So that's the idea of letting the fingernails grow and cutting them off. Look what the extension of this is, what its implications are, what it could lead to. Don't judge it by that. Judge it on its own merits. But on the other hand, be careful that even if on its own merits it's good, don't let it generate those negative things. Cut them off. Next, take off the fancy clothing that she wore when she was captive. The Gemara says that the Goyisha women used to try to seduce the enemy soldiers. They used to wear their most beautiful dresses during a time of war. So take her and make her change her dress into a plain, ordinary dress. Why? The dress represents how you see things dressed up and not how they really are. Take away your desire, your negius, right, your emotional, sensual attraction, and see it as it really is, right? If you have this tremendous drive towards having the internet, it's just, you know, you think you're going to become rich for whatever, and there is an emotional attachment. Try to take that allure away. See it as it is, without the emotional, sensual allurement. Take it and strip it to its bare, simple, what it really is. Not what you imagine it to be. Unless it's something I didn't understand.
What do the
Catholic people represent? What's the Hesira, Simla, Shivya, Me'oleha. Take off the garment that she wore when she was captured off of her and put on a regular dress. Right, the fancy clothes represent the allurement that's not really part of the thing itself. It's the emotional attraction that you have to the thing that's really not part of the thing itself. It's the clothing that you've clothed in it. Okay, the next thing is Ubachsa esavia vesima yerach yomim. Let her cry for her mother and her father for 30 days. And the Gemara says mother and father can mean her physical mother and father, or it can mean her spiritual mother and father, her avodah zarah. This crying represents closure. Let her realize that's it. She has no more connection to her mother and her father. She's probably never going to see them again. Maybe they're dead. Maybe they're not. She's now becoming Jewish. She's totally separating herself from her past, from her religion before, or whatever, and she's accepting now a new life. She has to make closure on the old life. So the idea being, take this thing and separate it and disconnect it from any goyisha connection. And take it away from its negative connection as the secular world, the goyisha world, looks at it. OK? Okay, take that permissible thing and make closure, meaning separate completely from the past, from its what's it called? Heksher means the
connection.
It's what?
Connection.
Connection. Okay, I guess that's a good right. It's any connections. Stop. Make it now. Start with your own spin on it, how you're going to use it, and separate it from the past, from any past connections that it may have, or connections to a secular world with its values and its standards. Separate it and what's it called? Start anew. It's a new start. You're using this thing now for your purposes, not connected to what it may have been used by others or in the past by you, right? In a different connection. Okay. And that way you can even, but not everything of the past is negative. A person becomes a Baal Tshuva, or a person converts, doesn't want to disassociate themselves totally from their past life. There are positive things in their past life that they want to bring into their new life. So this woman crying for her mother and father also is partially crying for the fact, one, that they are her mother and father, and she deserves to honor them, that if they taka die, to mourn for them, even if they're goyim. And also, she's sorry that they didn't have a chance to convert and to recognize what she recognizes. So there's a positive thing about crying for the past, and there's a closure of separating yourself from the past. So both of those things are important. To take this thing, start anew, take the positive things and incorporate that, and close it away from the negative things completely. And that completes the process. Now you have all these permissible things, okay? You may have now converted them, literally, into something very positive for your Torah life, or you may see that you're fooling yourself. After you go through this whole process, these things are not something that are going to enhance your Torah life, they're going to destroy it. Then, if you see that you can convert these things into something positive, then do that, and she'll be a wife, who will be an Ezer Kenegdo, she'll help you, these things will help you in your Torah life. Like a wife. If you see that it's not going to be, then let her go. Leave it alone. It's not for you. Don't get involved in it. Just let her go. Don't do business with it. Just let her go. What happens if it's not positive for you and you don't let her go? Then the Torah says things are going to be pretty bad. You're going to end up hating her. Meaning that she's not going to be that wife that's going to be your helpmate. But the opposite, she's going to be against you. These permissible things, if you take them and you can't convert them properly, and they're now going to be thorns in the side of your Yiddishkeit. They're going to be negative things. The end result is going to be that you're going to hate these things deep down because they're going to ruin your Torah life, impede it. And you know what's going to happen? Those things are going to be your firstborn. You're going to get obsessed with them. You're going to get so involved with them that you're going to become addicted to them, and they're going to become the that's the next parsha. You have two wives, one you hate and one you love, and the hated one has the firstborn, so you won't be able to separate. You have to give the firstborn a double portion. Symbolically, if you take this woman, and she's not really convertible, and you take her anyway, you're going to end up hating her. She's going to be at odds with your Torah life, and you're going to end up having your firstborn with her, right? Who you're going to have to give most of your assets to, right? Which is symbolically the idea that these permissible things are going to become an obsession, an addiction. They're going to become the most important things in your life, and you're going to end up giving most of your strength to those permissible things and not to Torah mitzvahs. And then the next thing is, and if you still don't recognize that, then you're going to have a ben soru mora. It's going to affect your children. You're going to have children that are so rare umora. They refuse to listen to the mitzvahs because they see the parent is involved in things that are negative to mitzvahs, and that's more important to them than the mitzvahs. right? They're permissible things that are not necessarily in line with a life of Torah and mitzvahs, are more important to them than the Torah and mitzvahs. And therefore they see also that the parents don't have the ability to discipline themselves, to control themselves, to have self-control. So the child's not going to have any self-control. And not only that, he's going to want to teach his parents. He's going to see his parents as weaklings. He's going to want to tell them what to do. He's going to see their shortcomings and feel that he's superior. So he's just so rare, he deviates from the path of the Torah, and he's a morah. He wants to teach them, the Abarbanel says. He wants to teach them also. And the, what's it called, the Ibn Ezra says, this guy is going to become an apikoros, meaning he's going to look at this world just for enjoyment. The Ben Soru Morah, he doesn't listen to his parents. He doesn't listen to the Torah. He is a glutton and a drunkard. He steals from his parents, goes and buys meat and wine and drinks it, what's it called, to excess. That's what the kid's going to end up, because that's what he sees with his parents. They're involved in all these permissible things that are not necessarily in keeping with what the Torah is. So they don't have any self-control. And they either have a think that these things are more important to them than Torah and mitzvahs, because otherwise they would be able to control themselves and abstain from it if it's not a positive thing. But they don't have that self-control. So why should the child have any self-control? So the child is going to learn from his parents, right, that he also shouldn't have any self-control, and that the pleasures of this world are more important than anything else, because they're not a means to reach an end, they're an end in themselves, because they're means to reach an end. You'd only use them when they are good means to reach an end. And that's why the Targum Yonas and Ben Uziel says, the parents say, B'neinu Zed, this is our kid, we produced this kid, right? It's our fault, because we weren't the kind of example that the child should have learned from. So we take blame to a certain degree. It's interesting, the Margolius Hayam says, the Gemara says that he drinks Italian wine, Yayin Ha'italki, which is strong, good wine. He says that it's only if he drinks the wine from the foreign cultures that it's going to be bad. If he drinks Israeli wine, right, and he's in the right atmosphere, there's still hope for a kid like that. But if he's going out to drink Italian wine, then there's no hope. All of this is a hint to the month of Elul, where this process should be done. Right? In other words, mitzvahs and averis, you can wait till Rosh Hashanah. You know what averis you did, you know what mitzvahs you did. But the hardest part is not the mitzvahs and averis. The hardest part is those things that are permissible. They're not a specific aveira, they're not a specific mitzvah. How do you deal with them? And that's most of life. So you need a month to go through this process of mourning, of recognizing the fact that being involved with these permissible things may not be the ideal. But under the circumstances, you have to cope with it and adapt to it in a positive way. How are you going to do that? And if you can, then take those things into the new year as Eish Yisrael, as helpmates, and if you can't, then send them away. Leave them go, because they're not going to be a helpmate, they're going to be against you. And that is what's it called, that's why one of the hints of Elul is in the sentence, Umol Hashem Elokecha es levavcha ve'es levav zarecha. God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your children. So the word es levavcha aleph lamed the levav ul the es levav is vav lamed is Elul. So the circumcision of the your heart and your children's heart is in Elul. Why say levavcha? Doesn't say libcha, your heart in the singular, because you have two hearts, Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Hatov. And the says levavcha in Kriya Shema that you should serve God even with Yetzer Hara. That's talking about the permissible things and converting them into something positive. So if you circumcise your heart, those things that are permissible, but you take away the Yetzer Hara and you direct it towards good, then your children will learn from you also. And from the entire gamut of what you do, they'll learn how to really be Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. But if you don't circumcise your heart, and you show your children that the permissible things are more important, and you don't care if they're positive or negative, then they're going to learn that that should be the ikkar of their life. They're going to learn that they can't be disciplined and have no self-control, and they'll see your shortcomings and think that they, you know, can teach you instead of you teaching them. And that is the hint to Elul in those words, Es Levavcha, the Es Levav, connected to this idea of the 30 days of this captive woman crying, that also connects to Elul. So that is the avoda, one of the avodas of Elul, to bring home all the things during the year that you're involved in, that you think you need, that are not necessary mitzvahs or averas, and to scrutinize them and see, do you really need them? Can you abstain from them? Would that be better? Is it better not to abstain, to indulge, but then how to indulge, how to take it and convert it into something that really is going to be a helpmate in your avodas Hashem? Now, anybody have questions that I didn't answer? Yeah.
So, practically speaking, towards the end of the transition as a parent, did you already damage your child by your actions?
Yeah. No damage is ever irreparable. Nothing. That you damage yourself, you know, there's, the Torah tells us there's always hope. Yeah.
Other than internet, what's other examples?
Other examples, being involved in buying nice clothing, nice shoes, if you're a woman. I don't know too many men that are into that, but especially shoes. But that's for men, gadgets, right? All different kinds of really gadgets and things, and or secular literature that may be very positive, right? In if it's used properly and the right kind of thing, but you go crazy sometimes and you lose sleep over reading novels that are a waste of time, not even something awesome. So there's a million different things in life that I don't want to give you the idea that I know too much about all these things, right? So I'm going to pretend that I don't know too many more examples, but you can think of examples on your own. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, all these things. A good example, the ice cream cone, right? The desire to have an ice cream cone is a yetzer, okay? It's a desire, okay? And that desire comes, the yetzer hara is not necessarily bad. The yetzer hara are the natural desires a person has that if he doesn't control them, they'll be used for the bad. If you give in to your desire to eat everything that tastes good, you're going to end up eating things of trafe. But if you use that ice cream cone because I really need my daily ice cream cone to really be a nice person, to feel good about myself, right? And then I don't growl at people and I do more chesed and I really feel good, right? Because, so that's product of the Yetzer Hara. It's part of your baser desires, but you can use it in a very positive way. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we said. That's why you have to shave her head, cut her nails, take off the dresses, take away all of the things around that may be fooling you into thinking that this is really a positive thing, when if you strip it of all of its allurement and your negias and these all grandiose ideas that you've built on top of, you know, this afro that that you built up, grandiose ideas and these long fingernails of what this is going to lead to and how eating that ice cream cone will really make me a better person or whatever, when really that's not really the case. You've just, you know, created this so you can satisfy your desire after you cut the nails, shave the head, take off the alluring dress and see it as it really is, then maybe, yeah, maybe okay. Maybe that you'll see that you're fooling yourself. No, because there's a lot of other things to be involved in. Again, Rav Eliyashiv doesn't go to sleep with a little doll. He doesn't eat ice cream cones. I'm sure that he doesn't buy expensive shoes and have a big closet full of them or whatever. And his life is not meaningless. Right? Fine. But on your level, you can find meaning in life, not necessarily with these things that are not going to promote what life is all about.
No.
So the more that you focus in on what's important in this world, so you may need those shoes. but at least you'll use them in a positive way. You convert them into something that's going to be a helpmate, not to be an obsession that you're going to spend money that you should spend on tzedakah or spend on your children's education on shoes. When it'll be a conflict, you won't do it. Right? When I was in Miami, so there, most people have a swimming pool, their own private swimming pool. Okay? So it's like, it's Miami. So when we want to buy a bigger house, the first house that we had in Miami when I was the rabbi there, didn't have a pool. We went looking for a house, and I'm sure that in order to really be an Oved Hashem, you have to have a swimming pool. And there's so many reasons why. First of all, there's not too many places for separate swimming in Miami. Here at Jensen's, my kids can go swimming, and we don't have to worry about mixed swimming, and we can invite neighbors' children and neighbors who would go mixed swimming, and they would here they would have a chance to go separate swimming. And it's relaxing, and it was all these ideas. And it was true. It really was a positive thing. But I convinced myself that really to be a real Oved Hashem, you have to have a swimming pool. I mean, and then we moved to Eretz Yisrael. And my house was about as big as the pool. And the only pool we had was in the winter when it rained, and then our living room became a swimming pool. And I had this rude awakening that you could really be an Oved Hashem without a swimming pool. Right? Surprise. So sometimes you can fool yourself into thinking what you really need for your Avodas Hashem, and maybe it's not necessarily so. That's it. But if you need it, you can use it positively.